Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shukra uvacha evam paradharana yatma yonir nashtam smritim satya varudha tushtat tata sasa jedam amoga distir yata payatran vavasaya buddhi. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virat Rupa, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. The example cited herein of Sri Brahmaji is one of forgetfulness. Brahmaji is the incarnation of one of the mundane attributes of the Lord. Being the incarnation of the passionate mode of nature, he is empowered by the Lord to generate the beautiful material manifestation. Yet due to his being one of the numerous living entities, he is apt to forget the art of his creative energy. This forgetfulness of the living being, beginning from Brahma down to the lowest insignificant ant, is a tendency which can be counteracted by meditation on the Virat Rupa of the Lord. The chances available in the human form of life, and if a human being follows the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam and begins to meditate upon the Virat Rupa, then revival of his pure consciousness and counteraction of the tendency to forget his eternal relationship with the Lord can follow simultaneously. As soon as this forgetfulness is removed, the Vivasaya Buddhi, as mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41, follows at once. This ascertained knowledge of the living being leads to loving service to the Lord, which the living being requires. The kingdom of God is unlimited, therefore the number of assisting hands of the Lord is also unlimited. The Bhagavad Gita 13.4 asserts that the Lord has his hands, legs, eyes, mouth, and every nook and corner of his creation. This means that the expansion of differentiated parts and parcels called jivas, or living entities, or assisting hands of the Lord. And all of them are meant for rendering a particular pattern of service to the Lord. The conditioned soul, even in the position of Brahma, forgets this by the influence of the illusory material energy, generated out of false egoism. One can counteract such egoism by invoking God consciousness. Liberation means getting out of the slumber of forgetfulness and becoming situated in the real loving service of the Lord, as exemplified in the case of Brahma. The service of Brahma is the sample of service and liberation, distinguished from the so-called altruistic service full of mistakes and forgetfulness. Liberation is never an action, but service without human mistakes. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Sakshuram Navitam Nena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namo. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudevo Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll just give a little bit review of the first chapter to put this in context. So the first chapter, because many of us have been here every day, Sukadeva Goswami begins to respond to Maharaj Prickett's question. What is the duty? Of all duties, pick the shudham, the completely perfect duty. What is the duty? What should one chant here, remember, and worship, and what should he not do? And we had the image, Sukadeva Goswami was described as very like, very, very peaceful, very, very fixed intelligence, and without doubt, you know, he had that tattva, that guru tattva, that he was connected, without doubt he was going to answer, you know. and Sukadeva Goswami, who also described that there wasn't a consensus among all the sages. So, you know, Sukadeva Goswami came and sat on the Vyasasan, so to speak, and he began to answer. And the beginning of the answers is the second canto. The Prabhupada said basically the answer to the question is the Bhagavatam. And then remember, he glorifies the question, because Maharaj Prickett was a devotee. So even though he asked a generic question, it really was directed, because he was a devotee. If devotees speak, what is my duty? They're expecting that the answer has to do about Krishna. So he knew the question was about Krishna, so he just glorified the question, because it's directed towards Krishna Katha. He glorified the question, which basically gave the answer to his question, which is the duty of Krishna Katha. And then he began to describe, to highlight the answer which he indirectly hinted at by just glorifying the question which asked about Krishna. To highlight it, he showed what happens when people do other things. Shrotra, Yadini, Rajendra, Shanti Sahasra. What do people do when they have other subject matters? Do those who are materialistic or not devotees, atmatattvam, blind to the absolute truth, materialists who don't have that objective to become Krishna's servant, but have the objective to compete in the world to his position, to envy others. What happens when you don't, or you're not a servant of Krishna, and you're materialistic person? And he describes how foolish it is. We can't go, we get into those verses so many times, but so foolish, so bewildered, waste your time, blind to the truth. And therefore, his conclusion was that this is the goal, to chant here, remembering Krishna, develop your sense of Krishna consciousness, so at the end of your life, you have a mood and bhava, a devotion of Krishna. This is the goal. And then he began to explain how that is, that hearing about Krishna is a transcendental activity. It's the topmost transcendentalists who have nothing to do with this world. They glorify Krishna. And he himself gave his own example. And therefore he explained that because you're a very sincere devotee, that very Srimad Bhagavatam I'm going to explain to you. Because you actually want the truth. You actually want to become Krishna's servant. You want to develop your devotional service. So I'm going to give you that knowledge that to live by about being Krishna's servant. And one who hears this with faith and attention, then Mukunde Matir Sati, unflinching faith in Krishna develops. And then he also explained this is accompanied by chanting the holy name. And then he said, don't worry, even if you have a muhurta, a very short time, still you can perfect your life. Better that short time of full consciousness than a life wasted like the materialist I just described. And he gave the example of Maharaj Kadvanga. Same word was there, muhurta. He had a muhurta, and he achieved perfection. And then he explained to him that there are some rituals or favorable conditions that you can cultivate to help you in this endeavor. If the goal is chanting and hearing about Krishna. And the first thing he does is you have to leave home. Because the home is constructed according to your material desires. The environment you put yourself in has a lot to do with what your desires are. Especially when you stay in one place called the home for many, many years. The whole thing is constructed to nourish your false conception of the self. So it's very hard to have higher aspirations in that environment. So you gotta leave it. You gotta be sober. Don't go to the holy places, Prabhupada explains, and then build up your house again. Be sober. Be self-controlled. And then he explained a little bit, you know, proper sitting place, keep clean, follow the regulations. And then spiritualize your mind by transcendental sound vibration. This is the basic practice of worship. And then he began to explain because it appeared he was explaining almost a little bit of an Ashtanga yoga process, that the mind that's material absorbed can be best purified by remembrance of Krishna. And he explained this also. By remembrance of Krishna, the dirty things in the heart will go. And then he described the universal form. Because it's God, the first step in God realization. Because for those who are atheist or materialist, the atheists or the impersonalists have a difficult time of remembering God because they don't accept his form. And the materialists have a difficult time of accepting God because they see things in a contaminated way. So then he began to describe the universal form by which you can start to appreciate the greatness of God, because I mentioned this before, that if your standard of superiority is material, then you can only become humble in relationship to matter. So you have to see God in a creationary role, so to develop this the basic sense of Krishna consciousness. And so it was described. And the universal form was described. How we can think of God within this world and how it works was described. So now the second chapter, interestingly, is beginning where Sukadeva Goswami is giving an example of how someone became purified by meditating on the material creation in relationship to God. And he gives the example of Lord Brahma. And it describes by this, he regains his lost consciousness of Krishna, that I am Krishna's servant. And that was described a little bit before. If you see, you know, if you're materialistic, and you look at the world, but you look at it in a way that's connected with God, which is the actual reality of the world, even if you do it in an imaginary way. But if you connect it to God, like you see a lightning and you think, you know, this is the divinity. Then what happens is you start to regain your lost consciousness that I am, that there's divinity and I am part of that and I am meant for its service, this mood of awe and reverence. You only develop a mood of service when you have some respect or you see someone that's something that's great. The natural consciousness, it's natural to revive because we're naturally Krishna's servants. When we recognize something great and ascribe some type of consciousness of divinity to it, automatically the remembrance comes of our constitutional position that I am a servant of God. So the example was given of Lord Brahma here in the purport, and he describes here, Evam, just in this same way, Pura, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Atmayoni, Brahma, dharanaya, that's the same word that was used for the Virat Rup, dharanaya, meditating, of this conception, then pratyavarudha, he regained his consciousness, his nashtam smritam, the lost remembrance, tushta, because he pleased the Lord by this meditation. Ultimately, every process has to do something with bhakti. Even if you're jnana yoga, stanga yoga, there's some worship involved because you have to get some mercy to get realization. So then, and tata, thereafter, he attained his vision and vivasaya buddhi and his fixed pure consciousness. The intelligence became fixed again by this. So this is the example that was given. And Prabhupada, in the purport, just the example cited, forgetfulness of Brahmaji, is one of forgetfulness. Forgetfulness also means ahankara. I am the doer. That literally, ahankara means I am the doer. So it's forgetfulness of the concept that actually I am the servant of Krishna. That's what the false ego is. Ahankara also means the attachment to the body. So Brahma, he forgot. And in fact, he specifically asked Krishna,
again, after he actually remembered what to do, then he asked Krishna again, now that I'm going to become the creator, how am I going to deal with all this energy and moving it around in your service and be free from that ahankara? How will that false ego not come that I am the controller, I am the doer, I am the body? And in reference to that, later in this canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. The answer is by having the proper conception, by having the proper knowledge. So he talked about this Virat Rupa. And then you regain this Vivasayat Makabudhi, aka Karunandana. This fixed consciousness that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I'm his servant. And when you lose that consciousness, then there's so many things in your intelligence. And that was also discussed at the very beginning, because when he mentioned, when you don't hear about Krishna and you become a materialist, then what happens? Shanti Sahasra, there's so many things to think about, social, political. I gave the example of Kartik, when you just fix your mind, nothing else. Then as soon as it ends and you let up your vrata, then all of a sudden you see this politics, economics, so many things enter into the consciousness again. When you forget Krishna, then all the duality comes. So Vivasayat Mikabudhi, he became, and then he awakened. What do you awaken? You awaken your service to Krishna. And this is called liberation. So Prabhupada describes that the conditioned souls, even in the position of Brahma, forget this, Krishna's position, our position, by the influence of illusory energy. One can counteract such false egoism. False egoism. The real ego is I'm a servant of Krishna. The false ego is that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. We can counteract it by invoking God consciousness. Liberation means getting out of the slumber of forgetfulness and becoming situated in the real loving service of the Lord. So this is liberation. Muktir hitva yata rupam. You gotta give up yata rupam, the other form which is not you. It means the body, the false ego. You gotta give up that conception. And, Muktir hitva yata rupam swarupam bhavastiti. And you gotta be situated in the swarup. Your own root, your own form. So our own form, the real form, is we're Krishna's servant. And the yatarup, the other form that we adopt, which is the body, is that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So liberation means to get out of this concept and adopt the concept that I'm Krishna's servant. And this was the whole Virat Rup conception and how it was supposed to help us to invoke that. And then Prabhupada makes a very brilliant point that the service of Brahma is a sample of service and liberation, distinguished from the so-called altruistic service full of mistakes and forgetfulness. So this is very interesting, this point by Prabhupada. Liberation is never in action. Because people think that liberation means to do nothing, but Prabhupada said, but service without human mistakes. It's a very nice example of the Virat Rupa. And now, what's going to happen now is that Shukadeva Goswami, because you have to understand, here's Maharaj Prickett. He told him to chant and hear about Krishna. And then he began to describe some favorable conditions to help one to do that. And then he described the Virat Rupa. Sometimes what happens in preaching, we described this before, you have to describe other processes of self-realization so people don't become distracted to them. And that happened in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna specifically asked about the Astanga Yoga process so that Krishna could describe it and reject it. But in describing it, because it's a process of self-realization, there's elements in that process that have relevance to you, just like the Virat Rupa. It's not our process of meditation, but by describing it philosophically, some of the essence of what self-realization and God consciousness is being presented. So we'll see that what's actually happening here is Sukadeva Goswami, for Maharaj Prickett and the benefit of others, is going to describe the gradual processes of self-realization. to highlight pure devotional service. And at the same time, make sure that Maharaj Prickett does not become deviated to one of these processes because he only has 7 days left to live. But so he doesn't have doubts about chanting and hearing about Krishna, he's going to explain these other processes. So he begins to describe the Vedas. This is just in one verse, actually. It's very interesting. What happens, he describes, because 7 days left to live, okay, you should get into self-realization, you get into the Vedas. But there's a lot of processes in the Vedas which are not meant for ultimate liberation. And if you think they're spiritual and take to them, you'll actually be cheated in trying to achieve the ultimate perfection. So he, in the next verse, he'll describe them and describe karmakanda, which are sacrifices and spiritual processes which have an objective of the heavenly planets in this material world. And he wanted to make sure that Maharaj Prickett, because he had 7 days left to live, didn't even have any doubts about chanting, hearing about Krishna, and wouldn't become distracted by these aspirations in the mood of religion. Yes, I could become religion. Let me go to the heavenly planets so he doesn't become like a Mormon. want to be Lord Brahma or, some other inferior process, which is just basically moralistic at best. So he describes, Shabdasya hi brahmana esha panta yanama vidyayati dhira partai pari brahman tatra na vindatertam maya maye vasana yashayana. The way of presentation of Vedic sounds is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of the people to meaningless things like the heavenly kingdoms. The Vedas can be very, very bewildering. Krishna also described that in the Yamimam Pushpatam Vacham Pravante. So many bewildering things in the Vedas. 95% is this karma kanda to get materialistic people to control their senses and regulate themselves so you can have a society that's peaceful for the higher endeavor of self-realization. So it directs the intelligence of people, the intelligence to things that really don't have any value, like the heavenly kingdoms. The conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures, but actually they do not relish any tangible happiness there. It's not real. It's temporary. Not real also because it's not connected with the soul. So you won't actually find your satisfaction anywhere in the material world. It's not real in the sense that it's constantly changing. It's not real in the sense that it's not what you think it is. The illusion of the material world is that when we get in family, society, friendship, we have a concept that this is real, and therefore I should put my energy into it. This is permanent. My family, my son, my children, it's real. But it's temporary. Nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate. That which is asat is temporary. And that which is sat, real, it never ends. So he describes this here. The innumerable universes, but none of them is immune to the chief miseries of material existence. Even the topmost planet, like Brahmalok, Satyalok, what to speak like that, is not a happy land for residential purposes due to the presence of material pangs, as mentioned above. It's not a happy land for residential purposes. Conditioned souls are strictly under the law of fruitive activities, and as such, they sometimes go up to Brahmalok and come down to Patalalok, as if they were unintelligent children on a merry-go-round. Don't. The real happiness is in the kingdom of God. Therefore, the Vedic ways of fruitive activities for living entities are misleading. One thinks of a superior way in this life, in this country, or that, on this planet or another. But nowhere in the material life can he fulfill his real desire, namely eternal life, full intelligence, and complete bliss. Nowhere. Don't be distracted. Don't be distracted. You have 7 days left to live. Get the ultimate objective. Tasyeva heto priyateta kovito talabhyate yad brahmatam upayata. Those who are tasyeva heto priyateta kovito, those who are kavi, they go for that which has purpose and meaning, that which has real. You don't invest, you see, they invest in your whole family and then it's gone. And then you find out it's actually not your family. It was just material bodies. And you invested all your time. Don't. So Sukadeva Goswami, here's the key point Prabhupada said, affirms that Marj Parikit in the last stage of life should not desire to transfer himself to the so-called heavenly planets. He should not. But should prepare himself for going back to Godhead, back home. None of the material planets, nor the amenities available there for living conditions is everlasting. Therefore, one must have a factual reluctance to enjoy such temporary happiness as they afford. You have to be factually reluctant that this is not what I want. And if we're preparing ourselves for ultimate perfection, we may undertake a gradual process of purifying our desires, and that's recommended. But ultimately, we must be on a path to becoming detached. So that at the time of death, we don't have any aspirations in this material world. So this is Maharaj Prickett. He has 7 days left to live. So now he's going to explain this further, that it's actually going to come to the next step in God realization, which is a super soul realization, because he's going to say, fixed. That there's nothing in this material world that you should aspire for, therefore you should meditate on the super soul. So he brings him to the next stage, and then super soul realization will be described in this chapter. So now he's going to describe, continue this, that we should not aspire, that enlightened people should not get entangled in this material world. And therefore they should live very, very simply, so that they don't get entangled in this material world. You should be able to perceive that it's not worth it to try to achieve anything in this material world. Atha kavir nama suya virarta sharapramato bhavasaya buddhi siddhe nyatarte nyateta tatra parisramam tatra samikshamana. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. Being competent to perceive practically that all endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. So the enunciate is going to be described here. Very heavy. Very heavy purports on renunciation. One time, one sannyasi was told in one community, we don't want you sannyasis coming here and preaching renunciation. But this is described. Now maybe I have to read the whole purport here, but it's very atah, for this reason, as mentioned in the previous verse, for this reason, that there's not any tangible happiness in these places, kavi, the enlightened persons, yavat, artha, the wealth or the values, minimum necessities. Enlightened person takes minimum necessities. This is Prabhupada's philosophy, simple living, high thinking. And this is it, back to the first canto also, when Sutta Goswami is explaining Dharma, he explains Dharmasya Yapavargasya. Dharma is used for liberation. Dharmasya yapavargasya. One should never use material gain for sense gratification. And then the next verse describes how should you use material gain? Kamasya nendriya pritir. Don't use material gain for sense gratification to satisfy your senses. Kamasya nendriya pritir. Labho jivata yavata. The same word, yavata, means necessities, minimum. You should take as much as you need, labha, jivata, as much as you need to live. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. Because human life is meant to realize the truth. That's the purpose of human life. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. Human life is meant to inquire into tattva or the truth. And therefore you should take what you need to keep yourself fit for that purpose. And now Prabhupada's going to explain that. This is Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma, or the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, is perfectly distinct from the way of fruitive activities, which are considered by the devotees to be merely a waste of time. The whole universe, or for that matter, all material existence, is moving on as jagat simply for planning business to make one's position very comfortable or secure, although everyone sees that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization following the way of phantasmagoria are certainly madmen. The whole material creation is a jugglery of names only. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter like earth, water, and fire. The body is not, you know, it's not your relation. It's earth, water, you know. You say, it's not your home. It's all temporary. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reaction to the three modes. We have to be very careful not to get involved in things that have nothing to do with Krishna, service to Krishna, because they're not real in the sense that they're temporary. Sometimes we see that. Sometimes people get mad in moods of reformation and things like that. But if the motives are not pure, and it just happens to be meetings, but not with real spiritual objective based on Bhagavad Dharma, actually it's not real because it's temporary. Since the devotee of the Lord knows them perfectly well, he is not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significance than babble of sea waves. I'm reading these, because this is this purport. You know, sometimes Prabhupada's voice comes out. This is his real mood. The great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. The fruit of work aspires after a big fortune in the matter of wealth, women, and worldly adoration. But those who are fixed in perfect reality are not at all interested in such false things. So this is the Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Dharma means to understand Krishna, that Krishna is the ultimate reality. He's the substance of everything. And everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. The whole world is moving for the pleasure of God. And that's the reality. It's not for our sense gratification. And we're parts of God. And we're meant for His service. For them, it is all a waste of time, since every second of human life is important. An enlightened man should be very careful to utilize time very cautiously. One second of human life wasted in vain research of planning for happiness in the material world can never be neglected, even if one spends millions of gold coins. So this is also similar to the instructions to Dhritarashtra, that he was described that he was blind to the effects of eternal time. Eternal time is moving. And when eternal time moves, it moves our environment around us. And it's constantly changing our environment around us. And he was blind. He was blind to two things. One, he was blind that actually it was temporary, and therefore he was investing all his time in it. And also he was blind that when matter moves, it's an opportunity. Our destiny is an opportunity for enlightenment. Destiny is meant for enlightenment because Krishna is beyond destiny. And the purpose of this world is to enlighten us. So everything that happens is a perfect arrangement for our enlightenment, provided we see Krishna's will behind it and react to it in the proper way. Human life is never meant for sense gratification, but for self-realization. Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us solely on this subject from the very beginning to the end. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. The civilization which aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. So when a civilization is guided by a class of men who see reality and see the truth, it doesn't create unnecessary things. It only creates things that are favorable for one's self-realization, favorable for their enlightenment. The material world expands from the Mahatattva, which Prabhupada calls the collective false ego. So the basis of the expansion in the material world is false ego, ahankara, or illusion. The material world is in one sense, if you have the wrong consciousness, the material world is moving to expand your illusion. And as material civilization increases, then it increases in the facility to think that you're the enjoyer and the controller. And a proper civilization, which aims at perfection, which is enlightenment, never indulges in creating things which are unwanted or anartha, or have no value to enlightenment. And therefore, when such a civilization is there, then it prepares a man to accept only the bare necessities of the life, or to follow the principle of best use of a bad bargain. So when that civilization is there, then it prepares one just to accept what he needs for self-realization. Because if you accept more than what you need for self-realization, it means you're accepting it for sense gratification, and it means what you accept will increase the false ego or the conception that you are the controller and the doer. So a person who is enlightened and spiritually conscious is very, very cautious about how he constructs his environment, because it will have an effect on him to increase his false ego. Because that's what matter is moving for. The whole material world is to facilitate our illusion that we're the controller and enjoyer. So he has to be very, very careful how he deals with that matter and that potency. And therefore, he accepts only as much as he needs for enlightenment. Human life is intended for realization of this important factor, and one should act accordingly, accepting only the bare necessities of life, and depending more on God's gift, without diversion of human energy for any other purpose, such as being mad for material enjoyment. So the transcendentalist is specifically warned here to fix his mind. So even if there's difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge an inch from his stark determination. He should fix his mind. He should fix his intelligence, his buddhi. This, it says here, Prabhupada's commenting on this word, he should be fixed. Vivasayat buddhi, the enlightened person, he should be fixed. So he doesn't have to endeavor for that which has no value to self-realization. For transcendent, and therefore Prabhupada mentions too, that therefore a person like Sukadeva Goswami would never associate with a king. Because the king, to rule, he has to present a lot of aishwarya, opulence, because that's what the common people respect. Common people respect power, and that's why they worship God initially in the universal form, and that's why a king, to rule, Naradevi has to represent God, but he represents God's vibhutis of power. So he has to have many wives, he has to have the kingdom, he has to show that he's a better enjoyer. It's part of the psychology of him being the ruler. So somehow a pious living entity can accept that position in the service of God, but still, to do that position, he has to have the accoutrements of power. He has to have wives and servants and maid servants. He has to have palace and king, you know, so that people will respect him. And therefore he can do his service. So for that person, he can accept that kind of power and wealth. And he has that kind of karma and maybe the training. And if he's a very high devotee, he can accept it in a way and be detached from it and be enlightened. But it's very dangerous to associate with such a person. So a transcendentalist would never associate with such a person. So Prabhupada said, one may note that Sukadeva Goswami never met Maharaj Pika when he was ruling as a great king. Only when he became a trans, you know, when he gave it up. There's a whole point here. For Maharaj Pika and for everyone to become fixed on what your goal is, what your endeavor is. And your life, you should live your life accordingly. Dhruva, you have any questions or any points from you said?
I understand what you were pointing out. Because I just read the Mahabharata, I'm kind of thinking of all the different sages and munis that came to associate with Maharaj Yudhisthira. But the point was basically they met with him when he was out in the forest, rather than when he was at Hastinapura and his position all the Narada Muni did come.
Yeah.
Kind of got things going. But that's not how it means.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about the different devotees that I know who at one time I'm sure had some level of realization of this aspect that you're talking about, world of names.
Yeah.
But yet, now 20 years later in their lives, it appears from maybe my position that the scales have almost turned back to the point where they tried as a service. Their initial motive may have been to bring up my children nicely,
yeah,
in a Krishna conscious atmosphere or whatever, and therefore maybe, yeah, India wasn't the best place, so they go back to the West, and then they have to, you know,
yeah,
have the house, and they have to have the car, and they have to have clothes for the kids. And then it's like they started to work, and because they're working so hard, when they come home at night, it's a little tired, so they buy a TV to kind of just relax.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the scales that have tipped, yeah, in a large way,
right,
from this kind of realization. But yet, I'm sure in their heart of hearts they still have that understanding. So I'm wondering why you brought it up a little bit, and it takes,
yeah,
me time. I'm slow from the conclusion. I really like the way you're describing how he's describing levels of realization only to ultimately reject them and take it to a higher level, the same way that Ramananda Roy and Roy Chaitanya did in their conversation. And I'm sort of like inspired by that aspect, maybe some of the other things.
What was the last point that you made?
That just as Sukadeva Goswami, you're describing how Sukadeva, yeah, Goswami was describing aspects of self-realization,
yeah,
forms or patterns or ways,
yeah,
to do self-realization, ultimately to not reject them, but take them to the next level.
Right.
The same way that Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya did in their conversation.
Right.
Lord Chaitanya would say, quote, what's the goal of life? And Ramananda Roy would quote a proper answer. But Lord Chaitanya would say, well, take it another step. And he would go to the,
right,
next level. I mean, at one step he's saying, follow Varnashram Dharma, and three stages later he's saying, give up, Sarvadhamma.
Yeah.
But, so the idea isn't that he's contradicting himself, but taking it to another level.
Mm.
And saying, that's what's inspiring me in this, rather than so much of the renunciation.
Well, you know, I was saying that these instructions,
you have to hold them in your heart all the time.
They have to be applied.
Huh?
And the application is that you have to see, and what I think, like, to go back to the mistakes that were made early, is this is for a mendicant. Maharaj Prickett is giving up everything already, so this is for a mendicant. But still, the concept applies. So the problem is that everyone tried to become mendicants when they were mendicants. So you have to see who you are sincerely and then see what you need and not take more. Yeah, and you know, and it's different for everyone according to their culture, according to their class, according to what they're accustomed to. You know, there may be someone who's very, very wealthy, you know, and what they need just by their growing up may be a little bit different than another person who's in a third world country in a village.
Yeah, it's not only in his lifetime.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Something they're bringing with them.
Yeah, so you have to see, but then you have to have more. Okay, so you're aristocratic and everything. It doesn't mean you need to have a television and watch the Simpsons. you know what I'm saying? But you may need nice furniture and, you know, because that's your class and culture and, you know, a nice home and things like that and, you know, clothes that you interact with the world or something like that. You know, so you have to, like you said, the concept has to be held in your heart. And if you're a sannyasi, then you have to, you know, then it's more applicable to you and what your service is, etc., to be more literal in terms of this. Because, I mean, the next ones, the verses are, when there are ample earthly flats to lie in, what is the necessity of cots and beds? Jonathan, can you remove this, please, after the class? You know. When you can use your arms, what is the necessary of a pillow? I'm getting it. When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessary of utensils? When there is simple covering of the skins of tree, what is the necessity of? He means sincerity. And sincerity means that your objective and desire for serving Krishna is not mixed with other desires. So keeping that sincere objective, then one can honestly say what he needs in Krishna consciousness. But when you're not sincere, when your goal is not just the pleasure of Krishna, you know, the strong objective, then you'll take more. If you're a sannyasi, you'll take more than what you should have. If you're a grihastha and you're allowed a little more, you'll take more. If you're a little bit aristocratic and rich and you're allowed something, you'll take more. Do you understand?
In the first verse, did it actually describe that Lord Brahma became awakened to his service attitude just by meditating on this Varat?
By meditating on the Varat Roop, he regained his lost consciousness. It says, what?
I don't understand.
Nashtam smritim, lost consciousness, lost remembrance. Pratya Varudhab, regaining consciousness. Tushtat, by appeasing the Lord.
Could you give the example from Ramadan? There are so many people like New Agers,
yeah,
or many let's say, yeah, Muslims and Christians, they, yeah, may see a divinity and actually have a sense of,
yeah,
a sentiment,
yeah,
of appreciation for that.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're going to come to their awakened consciousness.
Well, it means in a sense they will. In a sense, it's not that they'll realize their swarup, but in a sense, the general concept of Srup, that I am a servant of God, they may realize. Lord Brahma's meditation, you know, is obviously like a higher level because of who he was. But it says, Vuvasayat Buddhi, fixed intelligence is regained. Specifically, that's the word. He regained his fixed intelligence. Okay, just we'll go back quickly again to repeat a little bit about this second chapter. So, Sri Deva Goswami explained to Maharaj, Prakriti, the universal form, is basically the first step in God realization. For the materialist and impersonalist, how they could develop some devotion and revive their lost consciousness, their nashtam smitim, their memory that's been destroyed or lost
in the material world. So it can be revived. And so Sukadeva Goswami, in starting the second chapter, just gives the example of Lord Brahma, where this actually happened. He was able to revive his consciousness by meditating on the universe with swabuddhi, with some intelligence. I think the real key that's being stressed in these verses is that when you're performing some meditation, you have to fix up the intelligence to get the effect of the meditation. Because our perceptions are also based on our intelligence. And if we're chanting the holy name, but our buddhi is not fixed up, then it's called aparad. We can chant with the Maya body conception. So the real key is to fix up the intelligence. So by looking at the universe with a fixed up intelligence, with some kind of conception that God's energy, that it's God's energy, some conception of reality, then it purifies one. This is also with chanting the holy name. We're not supposed to make our intelligence and mind blank when we chant. We should have a conception in the intelligence. Not that our mind is wandering in all kinds of philosophical thoughts. We should have some conception when we're chanting. Therefore, it's helpful before we chant to chant the proper prayers that invoke within us the proper mood and conception while chanting. Perhaps prayers about the holy name, how it's non-different than Krishna. Perhaps prayers about our desire to get out of the material world, so we're chanting with some kind of feeling for service. So he presented that point. And then he went on to another point. He wanted to make sure that Maharaj Cricket wouldn't get distracted by some objective which was not transcendental. Because there are objectives in the Vedas which are not transcendental, like to perform sacrifices to go to the heavenly planet. So he presented that also. That the Vedas can be bewildering, and it could direct his buddhi to things which have no meaning. And then you could hover in sudden dreams of material pleasure in the illusion that it's spiritual. Like the Christian. I'm going to heaven. The Muslims, I'm going to heaven. You know, and there's better family and more attachment with family and even better sex or whatever. You can hover in this, but you really won't get any happiness there. And therefore his conclusion is, for this reason, the enlightened person don't endeavor for material comfort. They take the minimum necessity so they don't get entangled within this world. And they don't have to invest in energy in anything else but that endeavor of self-realization. So they should fix their intelligence and never endeavor for these things which have no value. So not to endeavor for the material world where the reality of things are only the names of the things. Not the actual object. Just like Prabhupada said, when you see a mirage in the desert, you say there's water. The reality is the water, the name, but the object is not there. So that's the material world. Friendship, society, family, mother, father. These are real things, but they're not there. It's just a world of names. And we should see that endeavoring for them is simply hard labor. That's all it is. It's not a wonderful result. And we should be very, very determined. Again, this fixed intelligence. Now, text 4. Then it describes that you can live very simply, one who's a transcendentalist. One who actually has this realization. You should live very simply. Simple, you know, this is the verse, what is the use of arms and necessity of the pillow? And the same thing, necessities of life, the comforts in the body, should not be increased because that human energy is spoiled in this endeavor. And we can see when we try to increase our needs, we also increase the energy
that we're putting into our own sense gratification. And it has an effect on our consciousness, which deviates us from that endeavor of self-realization. The Prabhupada discussed about great saints and sages of yore. They didn't live in palatial buildings furnished with good furniture and so-called amenities of life. They used to live in huts and groves, yet they had the immense treasures of high knowledge of all perfection. The simple life, high thinking, this is a concept here. This energy of human life, the self-realization. And so this was what was stressed. Now, the next verse. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common ground? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers being dried up no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of mountains now closed? Or above all, does not the Almighty protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do learned sages go to flatter those intoxicated by hot air and wealth? So now the point is that because he's described this life of the mendicant, who's living a life in full reality of truth and God. So he's described this life, and Prabhupada discusses a little bit about the culture. So in the culture, Vedic society, if one is going to devote himself fully to God, there's a class of men that devote themselves fully to God. So the Vedic society has a system where these people are maintained so that there can be a class of men in society who can act completely without self-interest. Right? You're a householder. You have to think of your own self-interest, your own needs, and you have to put energy into that. Therefore, you have to start thinking in that consciousness. How will I live? How will I eat? How will I get shelter? How will my wife be satisfied? How will we get this? But your duty is to put energy into that. But there has to be a class of men in society who can live completely selflessly or have an opportunity to live completely selflessly, and they don't have to worry about clothing, food, etc. They just have to worry about their own self-realization and the self-realization of others. Therefore, in a proper culture, these people who are detached are completely maintained. This is also described when Vidura came back to Hastinapur. Yudhisthira asked him, how were you fed? What was the system? And Prabhupada explained that the system was there to maintain such people. So there's a class of men who don't want to work. They're not interested in self-realization. They don't want to work. So they take the garb of mendicants. And therefore, they just live off of society, taking advantage of the charitable disposition of these faithful, cultured householders. To hear the verse by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Kripa, which is to him and others, take to this life of renunciation, but for the purpose of self-realization. Don't depend on Krishna. The purport of Prabhupada explains how by depending on Krishna, you get daivi sampat, spiritual assets. By living simply and performing austerities, you acquire spiritual assets, sukriti, sampat. Daivi, sampat means asset. And if you don't live your life like that, and you have to act for sense gratification, then you develop asuri sampat. You develop assets for degradation. And therefore, Prabhupada said, a human being is required to accumulate daivi sampat. And a sannyasi should live alone, without company, and must be fearless. He'll develop in this way. So Prabhupada explains that this renounced order, because there's a system of begging to live, that's not what it's for. Prabhupada describes according to the dictionary, a parasite is a psychopath who lives at the cost of society without making any contribution to the society. The renounced order is not meant for that. It's meant for contributing something substantially to society and not depending on the earnings of the householder.
And then Prabhupada, I read this before, and I'll read it again because it gives me a personal ecstasy. Because I'm fortunate now to be able to try to do some of these activities. The first duty of a person in the renounced order of life is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction towards self-realization. Among the other duties in the renounced order of life of Srila Sanatan, Sri Rupa, and other Goswamis of Vrindavan, the foremost duty discharged to them was to hold learned discourses among themselves at Sevakund Vrindavan, the spot where Sri Radha Damodar Temple was established by Srila Jiva Goswami, and where the actual Samadhi tombs of Srila Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami are laid. So, a mendicant who's living in that simple way, one of the reasons he's living in that simple way is by putting him in a situation, by putting himself in a situation which is beyond his organization and control, like the household, where you've controlled and organized the environment, or you've apparently controlled and organized the environment, so food comes, so shelter comes, and therefore you're in, you can be in the illusion that I am the provider and I am the maintainer. By going out and putting yourself in a situation where you haven't organized for your own needs, and then seeing that these needs are met by God, and this is a point that you made yesterday, then you develop faith into surrender to Krishna, because you see the symptoms of surrender are God is maintaining and God is protecting. You get an experience of this, and it's done in many ways.
The confidence increases gradually more than more.
What's that?
Confidence.
The confidence.
Gradually increases.
Increases. Yes. And then the story was given Prabhupada of Haridas Thakur. There was a snake in his cave. The people stopped coming, so he said, okay, I'll go someplace else if you want to come visit me. And then the snake, the dictation of the Lord, who lives also in the heart of the snake gave preference to Haridas and decided to leave the place and not disturb it. The Prabhupada said, this is tangible example of how the Lord gives protection to the bona fide devotees. I also gave that example before. I was bathing in the Jamuna, and there's a Shiva Bhakta. But I saw every day he was there, very simple and renounced, and he was, you know, offering water to the Jamuna and doing a little puja, and then bathing, and then about 10, 15 yards away, big snake stuck his head up. And the sadhu went, just turned calmly to me and put his hand up, curled like they do, and said, "Sam." And I just went, ran out of the water. And the sadhu keeps on standing there and turning around and doing his puja. And then he looked at me and put his hand up and said, "Sadhu Deke." So I thought he meant that the sadhu was watching the snake, no worries. But he said the sadhu is seeing the snake is seeing the sadhu. So he won't disturb. So he had that faith. That confidence. Very high. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the super soul situated in one's own heart by his own omnipotency, because he is the almighty personality of Godhead. Eternal and limited, he is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. The Prabhupada explains, he's Ananta, he's Artha, he's the unlimited, he's the substance of everything. And therefore, because he is the substance, because he is God, then the yogi can worship him only. Because he's the substance and not the illusion. Every living being is engaged in the service of something else. A living being's constitutional position is to render service, but in the atmosphere of maya or illusion, or the conditional state of existence, the conditioned soul seeks the service of illusion. The foolish people who have no knowledge of the substance search after the reality of life, an illusion.
in the temporary. Not to say vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate. The temporary has no ultimate reality. The body is temporary, has no ultimate reality as the self. And therefore, if someone's relating to you as your body is the self, then rather than that the self is the soul who's a servant of Krishna, this is temporary. Therefore, being fixed, when you have this conception and you're fixed, you should start rendering service to God who is, he's not, Prabhupada says, who, and to search out the Supreme Personality of God, we need not go anywhere else because the Lord is within our hearts. We need not search elsewhere. When you're fixed in this intelligence, then you should render service to God, who is the substance of everything. He's eternal. He's unlimited. Ultimate goal of life. And it says, Hetu Uparama, is the sensation of the cause, samsara hetu, the cause of samsara, the cause of the material world. Worship of him, bhajate, by worshiping him, one can end the cause of the material existence. So the cause of the material existence is our desire not to be Krishna's servant. Because we have a desire not to be Krishna's servant, which we are, then God, to fulfill our desire, puts us in illusion. And our consciousness is reflected in the material world and the body. So that's the cause. The cause is this desire that I don't want to be a devotee. I want to be the master and controller. And that causes the illusion of the material world. So by serving Krishna and focusing the consciousness on Krishna, then the desire to be his devotee becomes nourished. So the service to the super soul, the service to Krishna, worshipping him, ends the cause of material existence, which is the desire not to be a devotee. Because when you render devotional service, bhakti sanjayate bhakti. Bhakti causes bhakti. When you focus on Krishna, who's all attractive, then you feel like I must serve him. So you start cultivating the desire that removes or changes the desire that puts us in the material world. Therefore, who else but the gross materialist will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only, seeing the mass of people fallen in the river of suffering as the consequence of accruing the results of their own work? So, who else but the gross materialist? We also discussed this before. The word for the gross materialist is pashun, pashun, animal. Prabhupada describes, a person is too attached to the demigod, the exclusion of the personality of God, are like animals who follow herdsmen, even though they were taken to the slaughterhouse. The materialists, like animals, also do not know how they are being misdirected by neglecting the transcendental thought of the Supreme Person. So when you see the mass of people falling in the riverine of suffering as a consequence of swakarma jhan, of karma that's born from their own fruitive and selfish work, and you see paritapam, jushanam, that they're overtaken by suffering, then who else but an animal will get in line? Who else but an animal will get in line and continue with his swakarma jhan, his work that's produced from suffering? Who else but an animal will continue in this line and just be next? So who else but the gross materialist will neglect such transcendental thought, some understanding of what is the reality, what is the goal, what is the ultimate happiness, what is the purpose of human life?
What is the nullity of material phenomena? Who else? And then take shelter of this non-permanent names only. This is mother, not mother. This is friend, not friend. This is house, not house. This is country, not country. No reality. So therefore, he's encouraging to worship. So then he describes, others conceive of the personality of God as residing within the body, in the region of the heart, and measuring only 8 inches with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel of the chariot, a conch shell, and a club, respectfully. So others, swadeha, anta, within the body, hridaya, avakashe, in the region of the heart, pasantam, residing, the personality of God, chatubhujam, with 4 hands, kanja, lotus, vatanga, the wheel of the chariot, shankha, kanchel, gada, dharam, and holding a club. So they should, same word, dharanaya, conceive in that way, smanante, and meditate on him, and think of him in that way, in the heart. And then there was descriptions of that meditation. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. And his garments, yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed over the worlds of the lotus-like hearts of the great mystics. On his chest is the Kastuba jewel, engraved with a beautiful cap. And there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers, his leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. Prophet says, the personality of God is the most beautiful person amongst all others. And Sukadeva Goswami describes every part of his transcendental beauty, one after another. So this is it, nice. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. So Ishram, the Supreme Lord, his magnanimous pastimes and his glowing glancing of his smiling face all indicate buddhi, extensive anugraham, benediction. So for the servant of Krishna, what inspires his devotion is the mercy of the Master, the kindness of the Master. When Sukadeva Goswami heard some verse by Vyasadeva's disciples on the mercy of Krishna, he became attracted to Krishna. We should meditate on Krishna's qualities. When we hear Krishna's name, we should think of his qualities. And the main quality we would probably think about is his kindness and his mercy. So, knowing this, we must therefore concentrate on the transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. So one must concentrate as long as one is capable to be fixed. And what gives one the capability of being fixed in meditation? It's his level of detachment, his purity in heart. And that enables him to remain fixed. So according to your level of purity of your consciousness and your detachment from sense gratification, you're capable for higher and higher grades of meditation. I describe that also, that you can meditate on the Virat Rupa, on the personal Brahman, you can work on the Lord in the heart, you can worship Narayan, you can worship Krishna in Vrindavan. You can worship Krishna in Vrindavan in the Kishore age. And even within the particular meditation, you can meditate on the feet, you can meditate on the face. Even in the Bhagavatam, there's 10 cantos. So the first cantos are like the lotus feet of the Lord. And the 10th canto is like the smiling face. It's a qualification as you go up. The Prabhupada and the Purport discusses this, that bhakti yoga, or the process of devotional service, after one is liberated from material conditions. In other words, the process of meditation recommended here is bhakti yoga. When you become free from material conditions. But you can't meditate then. You have to become free. So jnana yoga is the process of liberation from the material condition. After one is liberated from the conditions of material existence, and one is nivritti, as previously stated, one is free, one becomes qualified to discharge the process of bhakti yoga. That's why it says, without that bhakti yoga, then you have to worship the Virat Rupa. You can't worship the personal form of the Lord, unless there's some kind of devotional spirit. And that devotional spirit comes from meditating on the Virat Rupa. When the impersonal and materialist meditates on the Virat Rupa, then he becomes qualified. He starts to think of himself as a servant of Krishna. He becomes more detached. And therefore he has a higher qualification. Therefore bhakti yoga includes jnana yoga, or in other words, the process of pure devotional service simultaneously serves the purpose of jnana yoga. So within bhakti yoga, already there's detachment. So meditation on the lotus feet of the personality of God at the first processional step must show its effect by anartha nivritti. So as it says, as long as the mind can be fixed on them by meditation, that's according to your purity of heart. The extent that you can actually meditate and focus on Krishna. But that meditation and focus on Krishna will purify your heart. But there's a basic qualification for doing so. But once you begin that meditation of Krishna, your heart becomes more and more purified, and you can proceed as a procession. And what's going to be described in this chapter is the procession of going back to Godhead by this yogic process, where it's very, very processional. In other words, each step, you'll see in every purport, each step that's taken as the yogi goes through the universe, each step is accompanied by a elevation in one's detachment, one is giving up. In other words, it's almost like weights. Material desires, like what you want to go higher, you got to give up more and more material desire. In the final process, one amalgamates everything that has nothing to do with the soul, with the mahatattva. Everything that has nothing to do with service of Krishna, you have to give up to achieve liberation. And that was the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he went to the north. Everything that had nothing to do with the self or service to Krishna, he amalgamated into the mahatattva. So this is a gradual process as you go through the universes. Then we discuss that Prabhupada specifically discusses the grossest type of nartha, which binds the conditioned soul and material existence, is sex desire. So he describes this sex desire, which binds one, and it develops into the union of male and female, then this acquisition, then this false egoism, and this subtle sex life, which means profit, adoration, and distinction. And the conditioned soul is mad after these different forms of sex desire. So one has to see how much he's been freed from material hankerings primarily based on the sex desire, subtle and gross. That's your standard. How much you after distinction, how much you after profit, how much you concerned with adoration. So we should see these things diminishing by the process of bhakti yoga. Because bhakti yoga automatically gives knowledge by focusing on Krishna. So automatically we should become purified and come to the stage of vairagya. So this is what this advancement means. And it was discussed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada quoted in terms of the Bhagavatam, how we should not go up artificially without seeing how much we've been released from sex desire. So, and Prabhupada says, people have wrecked havoc with the Srimad Bhagavatam. Havoc! By materialists, by indulging in sex life in the name of the Bhagavatam. Completely materialistic sahajya. And then meditating on the pastimes and engaging in illicit sex in the name of the Bhagavatam. This is how, what happens if you're not pure enough for that type of exclusive meditation. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada quotes, he defines the import of purification as cessation from sex indulgence, and Prabhupada gives a quote in the purport. Reference that from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Says, one increasingly gets free from the intoxication of sex life by purifying, one should step forward to the next meditation. In other words, progress of meditation of the different limbs of the transcendental body of the Lord should be enhanced in proportion to the progress of purification of heart. So this was described. Okay, so today I'm just going to read the English. The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to His smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and in this way higher and higher. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limbs, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. So this is the process. According to the Bhagavad school, the Lord's rasa dancing is a smiling face. Since it is recommended in this verse that one should gradually progress from the lotus feet up to the smiling face, we should not jump at once to understand the Lord's pastimes in the rasa dance. It's better to practice concentrating our intention by offering flowers and tulsi to the lotus feet of the Lord. In this way, we gradually become purified by the archana process. And Prabhupada discusses this concept that's being discussed here of purification, of gradual purification, gradual advancement in spiritual life, gradual advancement in the qualification for meditation based on one's detachment. The more one concentrates on the transcendental form of the Lord, either on the lotus feet, the calves, the thighs, or the chest, the more one becomes purified. In this verse, it is clearly stated, the more the intelligence becomes purified, which means the more one becomes detached from sense gratification. So here it says, the more the mind, jatam jatam, the more you're gradually controlling the mind, then the shudyati, then shudyati di, then the intelligence becomes purified. So what does this intelligence become purified? It means the mind is more detached from sense gratification. Prabhupada said, the result on meditation on the transcendental form of the Lord will be manifested by one's detachment to sense gratification. Therefore, the ultimate purpose of meditation is to purify one's intelligence. So by this focus on Krishna, keeping the mind on Krishna, we should have sadhana at least 3-4 hours a day, concentrated, preferably in the morning, focusing the mind on that transcendental sound vibration, which will automatically purify our intelligence and detach us. Those who are too engrossed in sense gratification cannot be allowed to participate in archana or touch the transcendental form of Radha Krishna or Vishnu deity. You can't come to this meditation and this service of the form of the Lord intimately until you become purified. For them, it is better to meditate on the gigantic Virat Rupa of the Lord as recommended in the next text. So archana is not meant for them because they're not sufficiently purified. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material world, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form at the end of his prescribed duty. The kriya of avachane, at the end of one's prescribed duties. I don't know, it means every day, or when you become purified by your prescribed duties. Then if you don't have bhakti, then you should meditate on Bharat Rupa. Yes. I'm thinking it may mean that. I'm not sure. It seems that way. When you're ready for meditation, if you're not a devotee, you should meditate on the Bharat Rupa. I think so. Some of them who are virtuous, the people who practice the Vedas, by deeds begin to reestablish the lost relationship with the Lord, but they are unable to understand the personal feature of the Lord. So that's what it's talking about. They're virtuous. They become purified, but they can't, but they're unable to understand the personal feature of the Lord. The real purpose of life is to make contact with the Lord and be engaged in His service. This is the natural position of the living entities. But those who are impersonalists and unable to render any loving service to the Lord have been advised to meditate on the impersonal Bharat Rupa universal form. For the less intelligent beginners, meditation on the impersonal feature, the Bharat Rupa universal form, will gradually qualify one to rise to the personal contact. So you become qualified to meditation, you're somewhat detached, you don't have the personal concept, then you can, well, then you can remember the Bharat Rupa. And certainly if you're too materially detached, you should remember the Bharat Rupa. This was described. Are there any questions so far? Mataji? See, and generally all processes except bhakti yoga is a material qualification before you can get to the meditational part. Generally, we see that. Before you get to the meditational part, because the meditation requires that you sit in one place, you have an asana, you know, you can't be engaged in worldly activities. But bhakti yoga is such a process because it's not a material process. It's the constitutional position of the soul, so there's no material qualification. So whatever stage you're on, you can begin the process of devotional service. I'm thinking also it means at the end of one's prescribed duties means when one's become purified. Because it's meditation, it's smadham, smadati, one should remember. O King, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed. And regulating the life there, one should control the mind, control the senses by the mind. So now Sukadeva Goswami is going to explain to Maharaj Prickett how one actually engages in this meditation and meditation on the super soul and how it elevates him through the universe. He's going to describe it. What's described here is that one is generally very concerned about the time and place in which he leaves the body. But for one who's a yogi, it's not as important because he's already, in other words, it's a facility to go back to, but it's not as important, although we saw that Bhishma waited for the time. But it's not as important to wait for the proper time. Are there any other questions? Okay, we're going to end this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.